Since this verse is picked out of context, I would like to give you a little bit the context. Now, this verse is about Narada Muni's historic meeting with his disciple Srila Vyasadeva, who was sitting in the Himalaya mountains at the bank of the river Sarasvati after he had composed the Vedic scriptures. Although he had done a masterwork, a literary achievement like never, which has never been matched, Vyasadeva strangely and unexplainably for him felt a deep sense of dissatisfaction. He felt really troubled by this sense of dissatisfaction. And Srila Narada Muni now appears in order to give him a solution. And here is the verse. Addressing Vyasadeva, the son of Parashara, Narada inquired, "Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization? Is this to your full satisfaction, this identification with the body and the mind?" Purport. This was a hint by Narada to Vyasadeva regarding the cause of his despondency. Vyasadeva, as the descendant of Parashara, a greatly powerful sage, had the privilege of having a great parentage which should not have given Vyasadeva cause for despondency. It means like desperation or a strong sense of dissatisfaction. Being a great son of a great father, he should not have identified the self with the body or the mind. Ordinary men with a poor fund of knowledge can identify the body as self or the mind as self, but Vyasadeva should not have done so. Now comes a classic sentence of Srila Prabhupada. "One cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind." Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Vacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyare Satarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. May I ask you, when is the end of the class? Is it a quarter to nine, or is it 10 for 9? I'm sorry. Thank you. Our movement was recently given also a hint. Many devotees feel dissatisfaction, and those who are in the role of preachers can feel this because their rooms fill up with the unloading of dissatisfaction. Devotees come and tell what troubles them to relieve their hearts. In the light of Srila, of our Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's very glorious departure, which still occupies our mind and to some extent our feelings, I would really like to address this problem of dissatisfaction in transcendent, in a spiritual movement and in spiritual life this morning. I know that Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, who passed away 2 Mondays back, was very concerned about this, and I would like to use this lecture to focus on the relief from despondency. Vyasadeva had really done such a momentous historic work. He had done what had not been done before. He had taken the Vedic knowledge and systemized it or canonized it and presented it for the benefit of mankind. He should have been elated. He should have celebrated a victory festival, maybe invited some other exalted saints for a party of Ganga water and chapatis with sabji. But here he was sitting, alone, desperate. Something was not right, although he had done so much. Narada Muni arrived at the place, looked at Vyasadeva and his and he was aware of his literature, and told him that you have given Vedic scriptures which are not really about Sanatana Dharma, the eternal relation of the soul with the Lord, and Abhideya and Prayojana. You have told so much on the Dharma relating to the body and the mind. And do you think the self is the body and the mind? Do you think by this type of worldview you can be satisfied? Is this? It was a hint. It was a question with an answer. Srila Prabhupada, he says, one cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. We remember today our last physical meeting with Srila Prabhupada, which was orchestrated by Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj came to a Sankirtan devotees from Germany who had just arrived in London to respond to Srila Prabhupada's call that he would like to see his disciples and preach to them. And I remember we were ushered into the room where Srila Prabhupada set for his what turned out to be his last instructions to us. We were all, I just very clearly remember, a little bit shocked to see Srila Prabhupada so emaciated. Prabhupada had big spectacles on, which at that time were giving the loving idiomatic expression Govinda spectacles. His Govinda spectacles. and he looked at us. I remember I personally was so a mixture of excited and also upset because he was so emaciated, so thin, that I lost my dhoti, much to my embarrassment. I came in and something started to move in the belly area and struggle free of the dhoti. And it was already here and I caught it and sat down and was now doubly excited to hear the final instructions. So Prabhupada, he had noticed our excitement, means all of our excitement. I did not know if he noticed the embarrassing situation, but he looked at us very soberly and he asked us the question, so have you understood our philosophy? This was a cue at that time for devotees to give their understandings to Srila Prabhupada, and several devotees responded with several understandings of the philosophy. And Srila Prabhupada obviously had a certain instruction in his mind. He knew it would be his last possibility to, in this physical frame, address his disciples, and he wanted to say something very important, obviously. So he said a sentence which still rings in my mind. First of all, you have to understand that life is eternal. This was not the first time where Srila Prabhupada had established Atma Gyan, or the knowledge of the eternal self, as a basis for Krishna consciousness. There is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 2:41, if I can remember exactly, where Prabhupada says the whole process of Krishna consciousness is dependent on the understanding that the self is different from the body. The Vyasadeva is sitting now in the classroom of Narada Muni. Narada Muni is inquiring him. He sees you are dissatisfied. He's dissatisfied, the disciple. He wishes to help him, and he spots the cause of Vyasa's dissatisfaction by asking, are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as objects of self-realization? Is that yourself? And Prabhupada said, ordinary people can say Atma is the body or the mind. But someone with a great parentage, that is, a great lineage, a great tradition behind him, should not make this identification. For him, this would be a terrible mistake. This reminds us of Krishna's question to the dejected Arjuna. He says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. They don't identify with the self, with the body, who is sometimes living and sometimes dead. And beyond birth and death, Srila Prabhupada is talking about this again. And my dear devotees, I will make an interesting point in a few moments. Please don't do what I always do. I have heard this a million times. Did I pay an expensive seminar fee to hear this again? I want to hear something new. Listen carefully. as long as you are sometimes finding you're dissatisfied or not cheerful, this might be the cause that you are identifying with the mind or the body. The first step in self-realization is realizing one's identity as separate from the body. I'm not this body, but am spirit soul, is an essential realization for anyone who wants to transcend death and enter into the spiritual world beyond. It is not simply a matter of saying, I am not this body. Oh, I might add to put on a t-shirt, I am not the body. It is not simply a matter of saying I am not this body, but of actually realizing it. This is not as simple as it may seem at first. If you would like to know where this quotation is from, it's from the little pocketbook, Beyond Birth and Death, page number 1. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj seemed to have realized this. Therefore, he was without fear when he entered into his final test. He had his smile. He joked about his body. I remember how Prabhupada taught us this. Prabhupada had at one stage of his journey powder to counteract the swelling of his body. Then he smiled at us and said, now I'm looking like Lord Shiva, white. Certainly his caretakers didn't feel it's a great joke. Once Prabhupada was carried in by his caretakers onto the roof of his room, and he all of a sudden started to laugh, and he was shaking. The caretaker, Prabhupada was very cheerful, and the caretakers looked at him and said, I shall explain. And so he wanted to be carried up, and then he explained. He said, there's a saying in Bengali, the man is so poor, he has to eat grasshoppers. But when he is going to the toilet, he is carried by a white horse. Now, most probably, you don't have the cultural context to explode in uproarious laughter. This is a Bengali proverb, a joking proverb, this means laughter until you lie on the ground. But I will not help you to laugh like this today by making it more explainable, but it shows a personality totally separated from the wrong identification of the body and the mind. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in his last email to me, said several things, and then he said, it seems from now on we will have to associate in our dreams. My body is quickly decomposing. I thought it's a nice way to express a friendship. That yes, there is no end to the friendships, like there's no end to the world of dreams. This is how I interpreted it. There is our association will go on without end. I thought, yeah, it's nice. I'm very grateful that he says it, but will he appear in my dreams? And then he did so. And he had a message which I would like to share with you today. It was one fine morning. I was still resting away in my bed. And all of a sudden there was a dream. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was sitting at the table and taking prasadam with Radhanath Maharaj. And they were absorbed in their conversation. I was looking on. I knew the table, I knew the room, because we had dined there. All of a sudden, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj looked away from Radhanath Maharaj and right into my eyes. He was very serious. Usually he would smile before he would say something to me. Because he saw all my anattas and he would smile. But this time he was very serious. He said, "Sachi Nandan Swami, in our heart are two dogs fighting. Who will win?" I could not even think about the question, two dogs in the heart. I mean, I don't know them. I don't know how big the one is and how sharp teeth he has and how skilled he is in street fighting. And how can I answer this question? And also, I don't care for any such questions. How are you? This is my question to you. He looked at me. He wanted an answer. Who of the fighting dogs will win? Maharaj, you say. And he said, that dog will win whom you give food. Think about it for a moment. Don't we sometimes have two natures? Or speaking in the language of the emotions in Krishna conscious course, don't we sometimes have two selves and are divided selves? Goethe said, "Two souls reside in my chest. The one soul gives the other frustration." Something like this. I have not cared to learn this properly, but it is something like this. Yes, we are divided. And we have to give the spiritual self or the spiritual side in us good food. This is expressed in the Bhagavatam, this food, 1:5:10, same chapter, verse number 10. But let me look at the Vistvashna, where it talks about literature. One literature is for saintly persons. It's literature which describes the glories of the Lord. The other food for the other dog is that literature which is doing that. It is not about self-realization, it's not about the glorification of God, and it's described to be a place of pilgrimage for crows, or you could say for the material dogs. They will go there. How do we react in these times, modern times, to such statements? If you want to read the whole verse, it's 1:5:10 and 1:5:11. How do we deal with this? I think many devotees feel like the artist Rauschenberg. Rauschenberg said, "I would like to bridge the gap between my life and my art." and I want to translate it now into a different context. I would like to bridge the gap between the reality of my material existence and my highest ideals. And this obviously is not done by phraseology, means making phrases. I'm not the body, Prabhu. Don't be a Maya, Prabhu. Pilgrimage of the Crows is the title for all those who read another book than Prabhupada's books. Those phrases don't help us much. Because they don't tell us what we can do to actually develop a higher taste in our life. What we can do to overcome the demands of our material dog. What we can do to make him even a little satisfied so that he is not starved to death and tortures us by this, but that he is, our body is well, our mind is well taken care of, so that we can take on the real duty so that we can be undisturbed in our spiritual pursuit. I think you all know what happens if you ignore the other dog totally. There will be so much dissatisfaction and so much disturbance, emotional and physical, that you cannot really feed this the real persona with the much desired spiritual food. Chanakya Pandit would give something which is a help for the divided self. He would say, in this world, we must practice something like Yukta Vairagya. See things from this world and see how they are useful for our spiritual pursuit. We can see this in two of our courses. One of Ravindra Swarup Prabhu and one of Jayadvaita Maharaj, who have used sociological findings to help us in our spiritual pursuit. And I think we who are sitting in their classes find it highly enlightening, highly useful for our spiritual pursuit. So Chanakya Pandit would say, find nectar in a stock of poison. Find gold even in filthy places. And accept a talented wife even from a questionable social background. So yes, a devotee will not reject the body and bodily and mental knowledge. But he will find how it is useful for his spiritual development. This is the first thing, first advice. Srila Prabhupada, there was once an disenchanted devotee who wanted to leave him. You know, after all, Prabhupada had sent him to, I believe, Santa Fe, somewhere in the desert, to preach. And finally, one devotee came one bhakta came. But this bhakta fell in love with the wife of that devotee and ran away with the wife of that devotee. That was too much in the faith department of this devotee, and he wanted to run away, but he wanted to do so gracefully, so he wanted to say goodbye to Prabhupada. Now this devotee had a ability to carve. Now Prabhupada said, before you leave, please carve me Radha and Krishna. From what? The devotee did so for 2 weeks, and after he had delivered his piece of art to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, isn't this how life is? We have to carve Radha and Krishna out of this world, just like we carve a piece of art out of a block of wood. So this is a little bit, you know, looking towards the world, not in a totally rejectful way, not wiping your dog with a whip, mea culpa, mea culpa, but to actually see how to relate this world with the Lord, and even how to find the Lord in this world. This is for beginner devotees like us, who have not always realized that we are separate from the mind and the body. It's not for saints, says Srila Prabhupada, who are highly realized, but let us gracefully accept the position in which we are. Another thing is, while in this world, it's a tip, we should prepare for our examination. When a person prepares for his examination, he wants to find out what are the questions which will be asked. Isn't it? Because I want to learn for these. Do you know what the questions are when you leave this world? How much have you helped others? How much have you developed love for Lord Krishna? And how has this manifested in your dealings? This will be the questions. This you have to learn. This is the important task. And I think if you study a little bit Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's statements at the end of his stay in this body, you will see how much stress he put on forgiveness, on loving, on so on. So much that some of those who are made of granites, they sometimes felt a little, ooh, this sounds touchy-feely, and whatever. I don't know. Some criticized him because they had a different disposition in life. But by the end of the life, you must... by the way, also people who are a little tougher can love. It's not that I want to criticize the criticizers. I want to just make the point. All of us have to learn this art. It means really to give up selfishness. It really means to give up the false ego. It really means to give up the identification of the body and the mind if you want to be a mature lover. Yes. This is what matters most. And I will end my class by narrating about someone. It's not... yes, we will make it. It's in 1 minute. I want to read to you a success story of this personality. Who knows who this is? Who's lying there and offering dandavat? Maharaj Pataparuja, thank you very much. And you, of course, see in the center of the page Shishi Gonitai. This is a historic painting, it says. That's how they looked. It's done by an eyewitness. And this king, Maharaj Prataparudra, was a great devotee. And his kingdom was very vast, from the Ganga up to South India at one stage. And there were obviously always spies by the opposite party, that is, the king from the neighboring countries. And they wanted to find out, how is he doing, this king? What are his habits? And I want to read to you now a spy report on Maharaj Prataparudra. I thought this is a nice way to end this class, which is held on the day where Ratha Yatra is, and Maharaj Prataparudra organized these Ratha Yatras. So the spy would tell this report. For all of you who like to gossip, this is a good gossip. No. The Gajapati king gets up from the bed early in the morning, 2 hours before sunrise, and salutes 2 Brahmins before looking at any other person. This is how Maharaj Prataparudra took care of his spiritual life. Huh? Didn't look at anyone, 2 Brahmins. Then accompanied by the 16 Patras. 16 Patras are again Brahmins who serve as the Brahminical council of Maharaj Prataparudra. He goes on a ride of about 20 or 30 miles before returning to the palace. They would discuss philosophy there. While riding on the horse, they would go into different questions and so on and so forth. After taking his bath, he engages himself in the daily worship of Lord Jagannath. And then he takes his midday meal. Now it's midday. It's a long morning program, you must admit. After food, he does not go to bed like an ordinary man. After food, he recites the Ramayana. He reads Ramayana, talks Ramayana, and so on. And then he puts on his official robes bedecked with jewels and sits in the court and transacts his daily business as a king. My dear devotees, in our hearts are two dogs. The one who is victorious will be the one who you will feed. Please develop, while you are in Radha Desh, a good feeding program for your spiritual side, so that you can realize that you are separate from the mind and the body, and can, as Prabhupada says, become truly cheerful. One cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.